You are listening to a sermon by Henry Krause, recorded on Sunday, March 24th, 2024 at Point Grey Interminite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speakers are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Thanks, Gavin. It's good to be here. I know, watched your community grow and over the years as well. Now, as you're trying to figure out where you're going to go next and settle next, so our thoughts and prayers are with you as well. Thanks for inviting me today, or whoever did that. The rest of you didn't have any say, so you can keep looking, but you can figure out whatever else you want to do in your minds. So this Palm Sunday / Passion Sunday, I think we're never quite sure which way to go with it. It's a full-on celebration and palms a waving, or it's the silence before this intense reflection on the violence that gets unleashed on Jesus and on others. Debbie Thomas writes this: today we begin a journey that holds within us the fullness of the human story, the highs, the lows, the hopes, and the fears. In the span of 7 days, we do it all. We praise, we process, we break bread, we wash feet, we make promises, we break promises. We deny, betray, condemn, abandon, grieve, despair, disbelieve, and celebrate. What we've seen in Mark's gospel is that the crowds have been building and wanting more and more and clamoring for Jesus. And at the same time, Jesus is insistent on moving towards Jerusalem. Almost half of Mark's gospel has Jerusalem as a focus. Jesus talking about it, thinking about it, praying about it, and onward towards that goal. So there's this incongruity between what the people expect of Jesus and what Jesus is imagining and assuming to be the case for him. And from our vantage point here, 2,000 years later, we have a view of the whole picture, and even still, we're never quite sure what's going on and get caught off guard in the story. When I was preparing this work, I ran across a sermon posted by a fellow named Adam Walker. And in his posting, he cites a TED Talk by an actor named Charlie Todd. Anybody heard of him? Probably not, no. Charlie Todd moved to New York and he was interested in acting and comedy, but he didn't have a venue for him in. He didn't have any friends that he knew who could do stuff. So he decided that he would perform in the city, no specific venue. So he started a group called Improv Everywhere. You know, improv theater is, right? You just get told something and you make something up. And he began to set up projects, or as he called them, missions. So one of his first missions in 2002 was called the No Pants Subway Ride, where he had people get on the subway in New York City in early January, all the regular clothing that you need, whatever paraphernalia needed to go out to the city, except for pants. Now, don't let your imaginations go too wild. It was fairly tasteful, but fun. So we coordinated this. So they started in the first stop in New York City. Somebody got on. In the second stop, another person got on. Third stop, another person, until there were eight people on the train, nonchalantly walking around, standing, sitting, pantless. At the ninth stop, a woman got on the train, and as often happens when people come on the train and they sell peanuts or chips, she was selling pants for $1 a piece. So each person who was pantless eventually bought a pair of pants from her, put them on, and then when everybody was panted, they got off the train. No explanation, no nothing. They just walked off the train. In 2020, just before COVID, there were over 25 cities across the world that had a no pants subway ride improv events. So this gets one thinking about the Jesus event, or it got me thinking about the Jesus event. The story of Jesus and the grand entry in Jerusalem on a donkey sounds like a great story to tell. What Jesus does, if you look at it from the right light, looks very similar in many ways to an improv event. The story begins with Jesus making plans about his big entrance. So he informs the disciples what's going to happen, where to find the colt, and if they ask questions, what to do about that. So everything is arranged and planned in detail. Now, it's not unusual for Jesus to do unusual things. He often says things and uses events to make a point, to get people thinking and to question what's going on and what should be going on. Jesus is known for his theatrical bent, for turning things upside down, for providing comic relief, and for challenging the status quo, and for giving somebody a great story to tell by telling a great story. And so this might be what's happening in today's gospel reading. The story can be seen and read as a beatific scene, children running around gleefully with palms and people shouting, and Jesus serenely sitting astride a steed, small though it may be, and being honored and celebrated by his fans and his admirers. Hosannas, shouts of praise for this one in the lineage of David. It's a celebration of homecoming, of this regal entrance of the coming Messiah. But there's another way to look at this event. I think it's possible to imagine the story in a different way, a what if. Rather than the special moment that's a climax of the week, he's figuratively enthroned as the Messiah, it's possible instead to see this as a spectacle, a piece of performance art or a visual parable. What if it's saying something with a political edge to it? Maybe even using this idea of guerrilla theater. What if Jesus' goal is to highlight the ways in which his kingdom, his coming, his messiahship is unlike what's being perceived as the way it should be? In their book, The Last Week, What the Gospels Really Teach About Jesus' Last Days in Jerusalem, Marcus Borg and John Dominic Crossan write that there's historical research that suggests that there were actually two processions on Palm Sunday, on this first Palm Sunday, not just the one with Jesus and his followers. So during Passover, Jerusalem was filled with thousands of pilgrims, others who'd come to celebrate Passover, right? They were there to celebrate the victory of their God over the Egyptians, over the Pharaoh who had enslaved them. And so there's already a lot of celebration going on in the city. All the crowds are there, and the words of the Hosannas were sung as part of that festival event. And Jesus' entry into Jerusalem is part of that celebration that's happening. But all these crowds in the city during this festival might also have raised concerns for someone like Pilate, who's the current governor in Judea. These people, remembering their own history, might start getting the wrong ideas and begin to equate their liberation from Egypt and its tyranny with liberation from Rome. So in order to flex his political muscles, he would process into the city from the west with soldiers and chariots and war horses, showing the strength of the Roman Empire, a clear sign that Jerusalem was controlled by the occupiers, and not just to start thinking about other imagined realities. So what Jesus does is stage a counter procession, mimicking this imperial one. Jesus enters from the opposite side of the city, with his followers emphasizing weakness. Instead of holding the reins of a war horse, Jesus sits on a donkey. In Matthew's gospel, there's an additional detail. You know what it is? In Matthew, there's two donkeys. He tells us there's two donkeys, a mother and its foal. So not only is Jesus not on a war horse, not only is he on a donkey, but he's on a nursing mother with a young one long running alongside. What more symbolic way to contrast these two approaches to power and authority? One coming from the wrong direction, with all the regalia of the crushing power of the Rome, and the other unarmed, except for palm branches and a gaggle of Jesus followers and admirers. Chuck Campbell, who writes about this idea, says the people participated in the event do everything a victorious military leader would expect, right? They're cheering and egging him on. The whole time, however, Jesus is turning imperial notions of power on their head, coming as one identified with the poor, as one who's vulnerable and refuses to rely on violence, taking on the role of a jester who, in a humorous, disorienting way, offers a totally different understanding of power and invites people to see and live in the world in a new way. The event takes on the air of a carnival, procession of New Orleans jazz band, where there the folks from the bottom of society unmasking and challenging the dominant social order that's there. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth, Jesus preached from that mount near Jerusalem. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God, he said, kingdom of heaven. Paul, possibly remembering these words, reiterates them to his friends in Corinth when he writes something similar. He says, consider your own call, brothers and sisters. Not many of you were wise by human standards, not many powerful, not many were of noble birth, but God chose what is foolish in the world to shame the wise. God chose what is weak in the world to shame the strong. So Jesus' entrance into Jerusalem was the beginning of the end for him. 5 days later, he's executed. However, that's not the end of the story, either for him or for his subversive followers. There continues to be a great story to tell. 20 years after Jesus' entrance into Jerusalem, his friends are charged as political subversives for starting a church in Philippi, starting a church in Thessalonica, for calling into question the role of slaves and owners, and how we should work together in societies, for giving respect and equality to women within their communities. They're accused of defying Caesar and calling another man king, and in fact being accused of being atheists because they refused to worship Caesar. So this continued and continues to be a hallmark of following Jesus, speaking against those dehumanizing and marginalizing and exploiting ways in which power destroys human communities and God's intention for the world. Jesus' powerless, subversive entry into Jerusalem, challenging the authority of the powers, and then offering himself in love, is the model we're invited to follow. This holy jester, Jesus, did not use subversiveness for its own sake, but rather the intention was to reflect the nature of God and of God's ways. For Jesus, subversion takes on the characteristic of the one who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking on the very nature of a servant, humbling himself and becoming obedient unto death, even death on the cross. Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the German theologian, writes, God lets God's self be pushed out of the world onto the cross. God is weak and powerless in the world, and that's precisely the way, the only way in which God is with us and helps us. God makes it quite clear that Christ helps us, not by virtue of omnipotence, but by virtue of his weakness and his suffering. So here on the cusp of the Holy Week, remembering and rehearsing this story that has been told for thousands of years since that first ride, here we are today amid broken hosannas, yet with the promise of the one who calls us to new life, to live into the weakness of love. Amen. Thanks be to God.